And good morning. We're here in sunny Arizona, where at about 12 o'clock today, it's going to be up to 100 degrees and then up to 114 by 5. So you guys keep cool, drink lots of water. Thank you for being with us today at A Taste of Ink Live, which is part of the Vertical Live Radio family. And so our guest today is Barbara Morris. And we're going to talk more about Barbara in a few minutes, but let's thank our sponsor. So our sponsor today is Creative Ventures. Creative Ventures is part of Vertical. We do retreats for writers where, you know, the majority of our company has to do with working with creative individuals. This year, our retreat will be sponsored by Black Chateau Enterprises, and we're happy to have Black Chateau sponsor us because May the 28th through June the 8th of 2020, we will be going to Ireland for our writer's retreat this year. Our facilitator will be Jackie Shelton Green, who is North Carolina's Poet Laureate. And to get more details, you can go to www.vertical, and that's V-E-R-T-I-K-A-L, vertical-creative-ventures. Or you will be seeing us promoting the event on Facebook at the Vertical Virtual Passport page and throughout Facebook. Now, the cost is a really great cost. We have great accommodations for this trip this year. The total cost is $2,299.99. And that's going to include your accommodations. It's going to include some day trips. It's going to include your workshop. And we'll have more details on that page. To hold your space, it's $100, and you can make your payments in payments, but the payment has to be completed by April 30th. So I hope you'll all go to that page and see that wonderful retreat to Ireland. I'm sure that you'll love it. So our guest today is Barbara Morris, and her new novel that launched May 2019 is A Promise in Autumn. It's a tale of two people coming together during a time of war and uncertainty, and this novel reveals an enduring love despite the many challenges set upon this couple. Now, in a recent interview, Barbara stated that after a decade of retirement from teaching, her husband and her actually started doing some genealogy and ancestral family stories. They came up with great romances, a lot of sadness, rich history, and they worked with a genealogist to get a timeline. And so all the stories in her books were inspired by uncovering her husband's family story. Now, A Promise in Autumn, we're going to really get into our conversation with Barbara, but just a brief information, a synopsis of the book. The story tells about Keegan Cadigan, a displaced poor Irish Catholic girl who struggles to find love and a sense of home prior to World War I. At 18, she secures employment as a housekeeper and nanny for the Flanagan family, and an ominous warning of danger convinces her to flee the home immediately. What follows is the mysterious disappearance of the Flanagan family, a surprising romance, and the influential pandemic of 1918. So I am so happy to introduce to you author Barbara Morris. Good morning, Barbara. How are you?
Good morning, Celeste. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. So what's the weather like in sunny California?
Well, not as hot as Arizona, but we are baking here, too. I live in Northern California, about 12 miles inland, and we're looking at temperatures today about 87.
Yeah, okay. I know living near that ocean, I'm going to tell you, I know living near that ocean, that just has to be unbearable.
I know. You think I'm silly. I know. Well, anyway, it's hot here.
No, I tell you, I just spent a summer in Georgia with my daughter, and at the hottest, I think, in the summer, it was 90, maybe 94 degrees in the humidity, and people were saying, it's hot. And I was like, oh, my God, this is so comfortable and cool.
It's all relative, isn't it? I mean,
it really is. It really is. So tell me more about, you know, how did you, I know a lot of people that do their genealogy, but some don't want to do it because they're scared of what they find. So when you started really researching your family, I mean, for me, when we did our family there, I mean, for us, it's like, you know, a lot of stuff was just kind of hilarious because, you know, when you're in this time frame, you know, a lot of your ancestors, you know, they kept so many secrets. And when you start, you know, when you start uncovering the secrets, a lot of it's like, oh, okay, well, that's not really a big deal. But, you know, it was a big deal back there for them. So, you know, how was it for you and your husband to do your genealogy and to find these stories?
Well, it was a secret that prompted our search, actually, because my husband's dad died not knowing who his biological family was. And so, and he died at a very young age. And we decided that we wanted to kind of look into it and see if we could find out anything. And we did a search, you know, maybe 20 years ago, and it yielded nothing, and we kind of gave up. And then we got involved again, and it was much more fruitful this time because we had the help of a professional genealogist. So, what compelled us to do that was that secret. Who were his biological parents?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you know, did when you were doing that search, was there anything that you? I know because I know you've used this as a background for your books. Were there
That's
any
correct.
Parts of your family, you know, ancestral history that you didn't want to talk about but felt you wanted to put in the book, or you just kind of just didn't add that part to the book?
Well, the first book was based on this timeline of events that the genealogist came up involving this family from Springfield, Missouri, which we found out through our research was indeed the family that gave up this child for adoption. And the story was very sad and very compelling. It involved, of course, an unwanted pregnancy, an abandonment, adoption of the child, and then an ultimate a suicide attempt, and then a placement in a mental institution. And so it was a very sad story, but it was so compelling and rich in its parts. And because, you know, you are kind of removed with respect to this family because they are new to you, so you really don't know them. But they were well known in Springfield, Missouri, so there were a lot of newspaper articles that kind of followed the events in their life. And so when I wrote that book, I generally wrote it for family and friends, and then that book became a springboard for A Promise in Autumn, which carried on the story of one of the brothers, one of the Woodrum brothers. So it was a fruitful quest. I mean, it really kept us going.
Okay. So now you took a trip to Springfield, right?
Yes. In fact, you asked me if we've ever been on a pilgrimage, and this was definitely a pilgrimage. We went to Springfield after we had done the research, and I had written the first book to meet the genealogist, Paul Barker, and he took us all around all the settings that I chose to use in my book, and he also took us to the graveyard where this family is buried, and it was very emotional to touch base and, you know, put my feet on that hallowed ground, and I think my husband felt the same. But the cemetery was a grove of maple trees, and he told us that in the fall it's an actual destination for people that live in Missouri. They like to go there and see the fall color that's represented in this cemetery. So that kind of became an idea, a kernel, a little bit of a kernel, a seed to plant for this, my second book. And mm-hmm. I used that idea of autumn and the leaves dying off and the renewal of the spring as kind of a metaphor and theme throughout my second book.
And beautiful metaphor there as well. So now when you're talking about, you know, characters for your book, how did you determine that you wanted to use maybe some of these backgrounds as your actual characters, or did you allow the book to pretty much develop a character for you when you're writing? Because, you know, they say when you're writing a book that your characters sometimes come to life and say, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do this.
No.
So
exactly.
how'd that affect you?
Or you need a character to move the story in the direction you need it to go. My mm-hmm. second book is more fiction than fact, because it's the only story arc in there that is absolute is the story arc of the major male character who is a love interest mm-hmm. of Keegan Cadogan, who you mentioned mm-hmm. earlier. And the way it happened for me in the second book was that I was inventing characters, and that's quite an exercise. And it is scary, though, when you have a real character that actually lived and walked on this planet, because mm-hmm. you are creating things for that character to do that you're not sure of. And you don't want to get it necessarily so off base that you defame them, or, you know, you want it to
yeah.
be as truthful as it can be. But I had mm-hmm. a lot of fun with my female character, Keegan Cadogan, my Irish little pistol. She was a fighter, and I had a lot of fun creating her and how she handled the events of the time. It was great fun.
Great. So how easy was it to make that transition from a teacher to a writer? Was that an easy transition? I'm sorry. And how long have you been writing outside of the teaching profession?
Okay, outside of the teaching, I've written all my life, but I've never been writing novels. I never had the time. But
mm-hmm.
the difference between teaching is that it's a very social, engaged profession. You know, you're constantly up in front professing and engaging students, and so there's a lot of activity, and it's writing is kind of a lonely enterprise. In fact, you become very introverted because you are in your head all the time. I go to bed at night, and I know where I want to go in the story, or I don't know where I want to go in the story, mm-hmm. and I'm creating, you know, the next thing I want to write. And so these people are in your head, and you ask my husband, he absolutely misses me so much because I'm always thinking about something that has to do with what I'm writing. So it's a very, very different thing from teaching. Teaching is
mm-hmm.
very social.
Absolutely.
Very
mm-hmm.
isolated, yeah.
Right. I know that, and I can understand being in your head as a writer, because it is, I don't think as a writer sometimes you realize how much in your head you are. I know growing up, my family used to say, oh my God, we just hate it when you're reading, because I would just tune everything out. I was just in the book, you know, and they were like, oh God,
yeah,
we just hate it when you're reading.
Yeah, because you're not there. You're someplace else.
Exactly. So now you love teaching middle schoolers literature and history. So I think that because I noticed, you know, in your book, it does have some historic qualities in it. So is that would you say that's going to be your favorite writing genre, to always include some aspect of history? And how did your middle schoolers react to literature and history? I'm always interested how kids react to literature and history, because those are my favorite subjects as well.
Right. Well, what was fun about what I did, I taught sixth graders, so you have a very eager vessel to learn, you know, they're wonderful. And
mm-hmm.
I had developed a humanities program, and so the history part and the English part were interrelated. So as
mm-hmm.
I was building structures of vocabulary and words and ideas that they were writing about, we were also reading the history. And we normally, generally, were reading a young adult, or not even a young adult, but a child's historical novel that kind of went
mm-hmm.
along with the subject. And so it was just wonderful, because then I could include music and art and, you know, all the aspects of the culture, the religion. It was a rich program. And unfortunately, now in the state of California, all the curriculum is competency test based. So the kids
yeah.
are learning, you know, and they don't get
mm-hmm.
An enriching experience like this, but they're getting more in the sense that they're getting, you know, maybe more structured writing lessons and that kind of thing. But I just had a blast. It was so much fun. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know that it would have been so much fun in another grade level, but in my classroom, it was fun.
Well, you know, and you sound like that. You sounded like you really did a great mixture of creativity as well while you're teaching these classes. I think I think creativity for children is very important to have.
Yeah.
Some type of creativity when they're going through school is very important. And it seemed like you spent
yeah.
a lot of time with that. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. And
so
finding something that a kid is good at helps them learn
yeah.
other things, because they develop a sense of an awareness of confidence. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fun. I was lucky. I was blessed to be a teacher.
I'm going to tell you, I love teachers, because I, you know, as much as I love kids, I can't be a teacher. I can't be a teacher. I mean, you know, and I, you know, as much as I have fun with my grandkids, I'm just not a teacher. But I remember that I wrote a poem and the city had purchased it from me. And one of the schools asked would I come and talk to their seventh graders. And it was just the most hilarious experience, because kids are so, like, open. And it was so funny, because, you know, at seventh grade, it's like first love, you know, first love, first time, you know, meeting that girl or meeting that guy. And and they were saying, well, we're going to, you know, all the kids read their poems. And I was sitting there just, like, so funny that everyone had a poem about, oh, I met this girl. Oh, my first kiss, my first breakup.
Wow.
And it was just, and I was like, boy, kids are so easy. they
wow.
all go through this, you know, experience of life yeah. around the same time, you know. And but it was really great. Yeah, it was really, you know, it was really fun. It was really great, because they start asking me about, you know, poetry and could you be famous
yeah.
as a poet. So it was just fun. It was just so fun.
Well, it's wonderful that people like you are willing to, you know, take that step and go into the schools and share what you know. Thank you for doing
yeah.
that.
Thank you. So tell me now, what encourages or inspires you to write? I mean, so, you know, a lot of people have different things that encourage them and inspire them. What encourages you to write something new, or to you know, while you're writing these books now, what keeps you kind of fire going for you?
Well, I think the feedback that I get from people makes me think that, you know, it's a worthy journey. I can definitely see that I'm improving, that I'm, you know, I'm getting better, you know, as I go through this. I'm very proud of the books. That's inspiring too. If you have a sense of pride and you feel like it's good, that is inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the most inspiring thing is the idea of a good story kind of sits for a while and grows, and I think that is very inspiring. And then if you can get a good character that you absolutely love and care about, and maybe a character that you hate, And you want them to, you know, they pose the conflict in the story. If you can have really rich characters and you take them with you wherever you go, and they inspire. And, you know, you mentioned earlier about characters kind of tell you what they want to do. And that is really an interesting thing to think about. I was thinking about having a rape in this book, and I just couldn't do it. And I the reason I couldn't do it was because I knew that my character, she would somehow not get herself in that situation with this particular character who happens to be the antagonist in the story. So it wouldn't have worked, but it's quite a journey when you walk with these characters in your book.
No. Okay, so now as a writer, have you been inspired to write any other genre than this, or maybe, you know, short stories?
I used to write a lot of poetry, and I started a book years ago, and I just threw it out the other day, and it was one of those, you know, things, when you start a novel, people who've never tried it maybe don't understand that you come to a point sometimes and it's an absolute dead end, and you can't get out of it. You put yourself in a box, and in order to get out of it, you've got to go way back, and it's discouraging. Mm-hmm. It's not inspiring.
Okay.
It's discouraging. And so I kind of gave up, and I was so immersed in my teaching that I really didn't take the time to try again until this family story that really, yeah.
So in the story, A Promise of an Autumn, how did you, I mean, with your research, first of all, have you been to Ireland or, you know, in Europe? Have you ever traveled over there?
Well, we've been about 20 years ago. We took a trip.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, we did it 2 years in a row. We went back to England and Wales. And, you know, we kept thinking about, you know, getting on a boat and going over or something, but we never did. And I happened to be lucky because I have a couple friend of ours are Irish, and so they were just a wealth of knowledge of putting me there, and not there in Ireland because the book doesn't take place in Ireland, but there in the mindset of an immigrant or a daughter of an immigrant of immigrants. So I was lucky in that respect, but I would love to go, and everybody who goes has just has such a wonderful time.
Okay, because I was saying that one of the things that I thought was pretty cool, and I know that it's always interesting when I talk to writers and how they do their research, I just thought it was so interesting that you can have this story and then also be, you know, talk about how, you know, the World War One and prior to World War One, and, you know, and the influenza, you know, pandemic. I mean, all these different historical things happening. It's like you're right there. So how do you do that when you're doing research? So I mean, I think some writers really have a knack for just like being like you're just standing there watching it like you're watching TV. And writing it. How was that for you?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, the research was one of the, for me, it was fun. I mean, I might write a scene and then to go back and then enrich the scene, then I would have to do my research. And I worked with, of course, on the web, which is a great resource.
Mm-hmm.
But I also worked with museums. I worked with the World War One Museum. I worked with the Springfield Museum. I worked with my genealogist. But the research, but it's little things. You'd be surprised. Like I was working on my my latest book, and I had the female character put her hair up, and I had her use a rubber band. And, you know, just something like that, you think, well, maybe they didn't have rubber bands.
You know? Exactly, right? You're right.
And I had a character that had lice in their hair, and I thought,
right.
You know, did they have lice combs? Well, they've had lice combs since Egypt, so ancient Egypt.
Uh-huh,
so, you know, but things like that, it's not just the setting and the time and the place. It's the things that the people are using and wearing and talking about. It was fascinating to me, you know, when the draft for World War One, how that thing all came down, and how divided our country was about joining the war effort. And so it's fascinating. You don't want the history to get in the way of the story. You want the story to get in the way of the history, but you don't, there's a nice blending, you know, of the two.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And it was great. So what kind of writing environment do you like, and do you write daily?
Yeah. I have an office. My husband and I share it, and which isn't the most perfect thing, but I do my writing on the computer in that office. It's a pleasant room, and like I said, I do a lot of mind writing too. When I'm walking, I go for walks with my dog, and I find that really loosens up some problems.
Yeah.
You know, when you kind of let it go for a while and you just go for a walk and think about it. I mean, I spend a lot of time thinking and a lot of time writing, but I do write every day, and I probably spend too much time. But it's at this point, I'm in the editing stage of my third book, and so my editor is waiting for my manuscript coming back to her soon. So I've kind of been on a real deadline here. So, and I'm almost
right.
Ready, so that's the good news.
So what do you do? What do you like to do when you're not writing? What do you do that when you're not writing? Do you go to concerts or movies?
Well, you mean what did I used to do before? We do enjoy movies. We kind of make a point of seeing the best movies of the year, kind of thing, and they're fun to just talk about. And I think that is a real enriching experience to go to a movie with another couple and have dinner and just really hash it out and talk about it. I read, which is very helpful. You learn a lot when you read someone else's work. And I paint. I paint in acrylics and a little bit in watercolor, but I haven't honestly done very much of that the last few months.
Right.
And I also like to create art dolls. I call them art dolls because they're figures. They represent a story, every one of them, and so those are fun to do. And unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to do much of that either. But
right.
And I like
to
walk. Like I said, I'm not a super athlete or anything, but I do love to walk, and we live in the hills, so I get pretty good workout.
So, you get a pretty good workout then, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yes.
So, now, what is the percentage that you would say as an author that you have to promote your book, whether it's on social media or, you know, book signing?
Oh, yeah, to promote my book. Boy, that is a learning curve, isn't it? I have, you mentioned Black Chateau. They're my marketers, and they've done a great job. And I find that I'm on Instagram. I am not on Facebook, but I am on Instagram, and I'm getting the hang of it, but I'm not utilizing it as well as I should probably. But I think, you know, that's a good question. You know, I am such a neophyte at all this that I'm sure there's a lot more that I could be doing. I think that there's a big benefit to doing things like your show, and I've done some blogs, and I mean, what do you call it? Podcasts? I've done some podcasts. And, yeah, and I think that reaches an you know, people that wouldn't necessarily ever hear about you or know about you.
Absolutely.
And my the distribution of my book is, you know, just about everywhere. So that's good. And, you know, I think as a writer, you have to decide, is do I want to make a lot of money? Because if you do, it's a real struggle.
It's a real hustle.
It's a hustle. If you don't have that kind of hustle mentality or makeup, it's, you know, if you're introverted, it's kind of hard. But it's a wonderful, writing is such a an accomplishment. I mean, I think anyone who sits down and writes a story should feel very proud of themselves, because it's a struggle, and it's something that you you really feel good when you got it, and there's nothing like feedback. I mean, getting feedback from people is so wonderful and so helpful.
Absolutely,
And you know,
and I always love to go to the bookstores and libraries, and usually even when I travel out of town, I try to find the most unique bookstore to you know, to go looking through. And I found some of the most wonderful books in places like that. So I think that as a writer, you really have to love being a writer more than you love the money. You know,
That's right.
You know, you have to love the writing more than you love the money. You have to like, you have to really like telling a story, you know, to people.
More than
the money, because it really is. If you're a very prolific writer, it's very hard to promote yourself and say, you know, give 35% of yourself to promotion. It's very hard. It's very hard. I do promotion for a living, and I know that even promoting our programs, you know, I had to put things in place so you wouldn't be more overwhelmed, you know. But
that's right.
In the long run, you really have to just love the art of writing, have that passion for telling the story, more than having the passion of making the money. Because if you do, it's all about making the money. And I have talked to authors that are with some of the big publishing companies, and they're, you know, and they'll say, well, you know, Celeste, I'm only the, you know, I think I'm just the B student, and until I become the A student, it's really not much difference, you know. So you know, so I said, you just have to really love the story. So where can
really
people find?
Excellent. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really,
that,
you know, even I'm always surprised. Now, I have certain days that I promote the radio. I'm always surprised when I go look at the numbers, and I'm always like, oh, my goodness, that's actually pretty good, you know. But I don't, you know, I don't promote, like, every day. And part of that is I'm really respectful of the groups that I'm in, and I don't want to bombard people. So I try to give it a, you know, appropriate number of days when I'm promoting. But I am surprised at how many do go listen, and I am surprised at, you know, how many of them are shared. And I know, you know, the company will say to me, well, you know, let's, you know, what's the numbers, you know, and I'm like, yeah, okay. But I'm more concerned with getting the story out, you know, so I'm not hyped up on the numbers and, you know, and all that, you know. So I'm interested in getting the story out, because I know some people that really just love to read. You know, they love to read. They love to see what's in the mind of the writer. You know, they want to know, you know, they want to know what the writer is doing, because every writer has an inspirational story of how they started writing or why they write what they write. Very inspirational. So where can we find your book? Can we find it on Amazon
Amazon, everything. It's just about everywhere. And my name is Barbara Morris, and it's spelled
right.
with two R's and two S's. So,
absolutely. I was like, you know what? We were like, Barbara Morris. And then when you said that, I was like, oh, my goodness. Because
yeah,
it's kind of a unique way of spelling Morris. Yeah.
That's right. And it's caused us always. It's always been a problem. So if people go to my website, which is barbaramorris.com/bygonetales, there's a link there to Amazon, and it takes you right to the new edition. And but, you know, I just want to thank you so much for inviting me. It's been fun talking with you.
Oh, absolutely. So are there going to be any events coming up in California that you might be a part of?
Not right now.
Okay. So then one of the last things I want to ask you is what kind of advice would you give to a writer who's starting to write or, you know, a writer that's writing? Because I know every writer has something they've learned in their writing process.
I think I would say to anyone who's wanting to write is not to be afraid of criticism, that it's really your best friend. And I learned this in teaching, because students learn, negative criticism gets someone nowhere in the beginning. You know, there's things have to be a positive nature. But when you're a writer, you're going to get people who don't like your book. You're going to get people who, you know a lot more than you do about the written word, and they have opinions. And I think what keeps people from writing is the idea that someone's going to not like what they do. And I've had mostly pleasant experiences, and I'm so grateful to the people who would read my book. They're called beta readers, the people that read it when it's not quite ready to go to the beta reader. And you have to tell them, you have to say, you know, I need you to tell me when it's confusing, or I need you to tell me that you don't feel like this character would actually do something like that, and let's talk about it. And I think that's what my advice would be, is not to be afraid to have people read it and to give you honest feedback.
Absolutely. So we'd like to thank our guest Barbara Morris for being here today to talk a little bit about her life and her book A Promise in Autumn. And for those our faithful listeners, I have two free copies if you'd like one.
Can
contact me at Live Radio at Vertical Media Group, and the first couple of people that contact me will get a copy of Barbara's book. You can find more about Barbara Morris at Barbara Morris, and that's MORRISS.com. And if you'd like to hear more about Barbara Morris and more about some of the questions we asked her, you'll be able to see that tomorrow at Vertical Life Magazine. And it will include our taped broadcast in case you missed us. So, Barbara, thank you so much. And thank you for my team for us hustling to get programs together. And if you're available this Sunday, we will have Tori Reid on our program. You know, her father is actor-director Tim Reid, but she will have some women in publishing who will be on the program talking to us. So don't miss that tomorrow.
Okay.
Sunday.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank
you so much. Yeah, enjoy that hot weather.
Okay, I will.
We'll be looking forward, Barbara. I would love for you to come back and talk about your next book when you have time. And we just thank you so much for giving your time for us today.
All right. You're welcome, Celeste. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. And that's our program. Thank you for all of our listeners for being a part of this program today. Remember, our sponsors are sponsoring a writing retreat in Ireland, May the 28th through June the 8th, 2020. You can find out more about that on our Facebook pages, and especially at Vertical Virtual Passport. Thank you again, Team Vertical. And just remember, Simply Tori is on this Sunday at 3 o'clock Pacific time. You don't want to miss it. She will be talking to three ladies who are in the publishing world, and you just don't want to miss this one. All right. Thank you. Have a great day.